Thank goodness it's Friday. This is Nunavut Tidy in British Columbia's Pacific Northwest Coast region. You're listening to TGIF, Geocaching Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. This episode of TGIF is brought to you, of course, by the Earth Cache. In 2024, we're recognizing 20 years since the first Earth Cache was published in Australia. They are geocache listings that are not about finding physical containers. Instead, they most often take us to fantastic geological sites where we get to learn and have a hands-on lesson of some kind. And, well, this episode is all about them, so get comfy. This is TGIF Geocaching Radio, a podcast with a regular dose of curated geocaching news and adventure contests and hot topics, and highlighting the many experiences that may await you. And I'm Jeff, a.k.a. The Bruce Zero, so stay tuned and let's hang out. You know what? I kind of miss my clicky pen. I don't know if you watched my videos some time back, but there was a phase when I bought this little telescopic pen from the geocaching store, and I had it attached to my zipper on my jackets, and I would take it around, and when I was recording the videos, I'd have this little click snicket of pulling the pen magnetically out of its holder, and it was just so convenient, and I kind of miss that. It got lost, and then the store never sold it again, and I tried contacting the original company that had them to see if you could get more. I think they're still available on Amazon, but they're not branded with geocaching anymore. I kind of miss that. Do you have a favorite pen that you use? Do you have one that you take everywhere, and you know this is the one you've got, and if you miss it, if you forgot it or you don't have it with you, then it's like, no! I think most people do. Anyway, Man, it has been busy. I've been working on this first batch of GeoCoin orders for the last number of weeks, just trying to get this first set of orders out the door and finalizing all the little things that have to get done. But I'm getting excited for sending them out. I've been getting swamped by coding up a new website for Cashline HQ, the CLHQ website, where people be able to take those items and register and activate their artifacts. And then that connects them into the CLHQ mainframe to begin analyzing and solving mysterious observations and glyphs that have been found and detected from the cache line dimension, the cloud. Also, I want to publish a cache or two making use of the cipher designs on the back of the geocoins. If you haven't seen the geocoins, you can see them. I've shared about them on social media, but you can find them at cachetheline.net/artifact. The project has certainly been a learning experience for me, that's for sure. With ups and downs and hurdles and so much more. But this is just the first phase of the whole Project EGA. Soon I'll be opening up sales again for more coins and the rest of the initial order from the completion of the fundraising campaign. I ordered a whole bunch more than were ordered just so that I'd be able to keep selling them afterwards and if there was enough interest to set out for another batch of coins. So we still got more to sell. You can still get some. Supplies are not depleted yet, so watch for more news about Project EGA on the socials, social media, the sock meds. All right, let's dive into a few official news updates from Geocaching HQ. So if you recall, Geocaching HQ had announced that every month they would be highlighting a different theme for placing geocaches, and March's theme was plants and mushrooms. They posted a blog about the theme and then did some highlights for a number of geocaches that followed this theme, and you can find that link in the show notes along with loads of other links that that will be mentioned throughout the episode. April's theme is colorful caches. I don't know, colorful caches won't be very camouflaged out in nature, but I guess they don't have to be. I mean, a lot of gadget caches and geocaches that are hidden in plain sight tend to be quite obvious if you know what you're looking for. So, hey, you never know. But if you are a cache owner or somebody who likes to create caches, then there's a challenge for you. Make a colorful cache. And who knows, you might get highlighted on the official geocaching blog. More Adventure Lab credits were also just distributed by HQ, and these adventures are basically virtualized geocaches that that share space on the geocaching map. It has a separate app that you can download from your app store, just called Adventures. This time, in order to earn an Adventure Lab credit, in order to create one, there are some qualifications you need to have completed, and it's not all that hard, except you do need to be basically an active user of either playing or owning adventures. So this round, you need to be a premium member of geocaching. You must have done at least 2 adventure locations. I mean, who hasn't? With 1 in the last year. You should have no unused credits. So that means you've created all of the adventures that you have been given already. And of all the ones that you have created, they all need to be within the top 90% of global ratings. So basically, you haven't created anything that's in the bottom 10%. That shouldn't be too hard to accomplish, especially if you are somebody who wants to create an adventure. You've probably done all of that with no problems. So expect to see a few more adventure labs popping up in your region, most likely. So moving into some community news, Going Caching, the mega event out of Rome, Georgia, that everybody's got to get to at least once, which I haven't been to yet, has announced that this year will be its grand finale event. This is going to be the last Going Caching. And this year's theme is Detective Story. It takes place on October 5th. It's GCAJ6MP in Georgia. And this is what they wrote about this event. Grand finale! After over a decade of geocaching while dressed as pirates and explorers, Romans in togas, time travelers, knights in shining armor, spies, ghostly apparitions, 1920s gangsters, Egyptian mummies, and raging Vikings, the Going Caching crew has decided that 2024 will be the final year for the Going Caching mega event. We have enjoyed hosting and playing along with our geocaching friends from all over and hope you can join us in a final epic celebration at Going Caching 2024. Where in Rome is Carmen Candiamo? This October, you won't want to miss it. Sadly, I'm probably going to miss it this year, but it sounds absolutely fantastic. So if you haven't yet, make sure you get over to that cache listing and post your will attend at GCAJ6MP if you are even potentially planning to attend, and help to make this just a fantastic blowout as a grand finale for this annual event. And making a comeback, the Geo Challenge of the Month has begun for April 2024. This is a monthly challenge put out by Cache Advance and the Geocaching Vlogger. This is Season 9. They've been doing this 9 years now. You can see Joshua's video doing the first challenge linked in the show notes, where we have to cache with a pet and either submit a photo or video as evidence of doing this activity in order to be entered into a draw to win the special Geo Challenge of the Month Geocoin from Cache Advance. So check it out and have some fun with it. It's always fun to do these month by month. Now, I don't know about you, but I have some friends, and sometimes if they're working on a puzzle, they'll send out an email to a bunch of us, and we'll all work together trying to solve this puzzle cache. Well, near the beginning of March, I got an email, and this was like a really big puzzle, and I kind of glanced at it and thought, oh man, I'm going to have to sit down and look at this. But I was at work, so I couldn't really spend much time on it. So I kind of forgot about it, but I saw some other emails come through with people working through it. I had no idea what this was for. But on March 2nd, there was another mega event, the Bamarama event in Alabama. And I found out afterwards because I saw a link to a video, a spoiler video, and then I recognized some of the puzzles. This was the puzzle for Treasure of St. Anne, which is GCAG296. And there was a whole bunch of steps to solving this cache. And the FTF, well, the cache listing describes it this way. It says, FTF will be awarded a treasure chest filled with booty, including unactivated, rare, and unique geocoins. And in this video, what? Like a legit treasure chest filled with loads of, like, it's just treasure out the wazoo. You should check out the video. I've got it linked in the show notes. But there is a puzzle for you to work on if you love puzzles. GCAG296, the Treasure of St. Anne. That was a big prize for a cache for Bamarama. I'm not sure if my friends actually got to the end and solved it, but they didn't get the FTF prize. So big congrats to WaterFan5, Xana, and Ozzy for solving it first and being the first to find Congrats. You can read their logs and their recollection of the whole experience on the geocache listing, GCAG296, the Treasure of St. Anne. All right, time to dive into the meat of this episode. We've got a double X-size chat with Memphis Mafia all about Earth Caching adventures as we celebrate their 20th birthday this year. This is TGIF Geocaching Radio. So we talked briefly about Earth Caches in last episode, which you can find in the show notes, but today we have a special guest. It is the illustrious Earth Cache lover, Memphis Mafia from Geocache Talk. How's it going?
Pretty good. I don't know. That was a pretty big setup, though. illustrious Earth Cache lover. We'll see how that holds for the rest of the episode, but no, things are great. I am in a much warmer place than you are, so I cannot complain too much.
Well, we are here to talk about Earth Caches because it is the 20th anniversary or 20th birthday, I guess, of Earth Caches. Do you remember the first Earth Cache ever placed?
I remember your interview with the guy that started Earth Caches.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that count? And the first one would be what, Australia?
Mm-hmm.
I have not found that one, by the way. Just throw that out there.
Not yet. Someday, hopefully.
Yet. That's right. Yet.
Earth Cache 1, a simple geology tour of Wasp Head. Mm-hmm. And talked about that in the last episode. It's GCHFT2. And you can go check that out, including the interview with GeoAware Gary Lewis.
There you go.
So I wanted to just, because you love Earth Caches so much, just wanted to give people a little bit of a taste of what you love about Earth Caches so much. So do you remember your very first Earth Cache find?
Oh gosh. I was just looking through my stats earlier today because I was trying to remember, like, you know, best and worst and everything else, Earth Cache finds. And I'll have to be honest about it, but the Earth Cache for me is kind of a love-hate relationship. I'll say so, and I'll explain that. So my very first Earth Cache I ever found, I had to go to it 3 times. So not because it was difficult, because it was I don't remember the exact terrain on it. It was up in Cheyenne, Wyoming. So before I got into Earth Cache, I was more of a traditional, you know, puzzle, you know, whatever you find something. So I would go, and I didn't really do a lot of virtuals early on either, because I wanted to find something. So that first Earth Cache I went, I was like, all right, I've never done one of these. I've got to do one. I'm going to do it. Did the thing, went and found it, took a few pictures, never ended up logging it. Lost the information, had to go back again and do it. So it took me a minute to shift my thinking to a more virtual cache type. But I didn't really catch on. And the truth is, as we'll talk about later, I'm not a good Earth Cache finder. I've hidden several. I've hidden half as many as I've found. I've found less than 150 Earth Caches in all the years I've been caching.
Yeah. And you've hidden more than half of that?
Yeah, I've hidden 63, so not exactly, but and that was kind of born out of a love-hate relationship as well. Mm-hmm. But so finding Earth Caches, I think I'm trying to remember the exact date. So 2012. Actually it was in Colorado. It wasn't in Wyoming. It was in Colorado. And it was, I think maybe why I had kind of a slow start too, is it wasn't a traditional Earth Cache where you go to the mountains, find a feature, you know, and report back the answers on it. It was in town, and it was based on a natural spring that was in town that had been turned into a fountain, and you had to, you know, do some information on it or whatever. So it was kind of an odd way to start off, but, it wasn't a bad one. It was more of me adjusting to a whole different style of caching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there's something about geocaching that is fun about finding containers, but then when you come into things like virtuals and Earth caches, which have no container, it's a completely different type of experience.
It is, and it's not a bad experience. It's just different, and it takes a while to adjust. And everybody has their own preference of what style of caching they like better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, when they just start out geocaching, they pull up the map and then they see this other pin for an Earth cache and go there and be like, oh yeah, I found it, and log it found.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read the description?
Yeah. We've all been guilty of not reading the description. So
yeah. So what are your favorite things about finding Earth caches, and what are your favorite things about owning Earth caches?
Again, love-hate relationship, but the least favorite thing about finding Earth caches is you're not finding anything. So you're not finding a box, right? So once you get over that, because like that joy of when you finally see the object that you've been looking for, it's hard to beat that. It's hard to replicate that in any other game that we do, right? Mm-hmm. That something that's right in front of you, hidden and amongst everybody else, you know, you're sneaking around in town and you're finding something. It's you miss out on that with Earth caches. However, a well-done Earth cache should take you to a beautiful location. Mm-hmm. You're out in nature, theoretically somewhere where you couldn't put, you know, a physical cache maybe. And you're learning a little something about geology. You know, I don't have a background in geology. Mm-hmm. So you do learn a little bit. And my favorite Earth caches are ones that are not in town, but they're out. Yeah, I know you can put an Earth cache in town. I've done that too. But the ones that are out in nature, in a national park or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to beat that for just the experience alone of the scenery. So that's my favorite thing about finding an Earth cache. So negative, there's nothing to find. There's not a box to find. Positive is it should take you to some just beautiful locations and just make you very thankful that our hobby is something that gets us out in nature instead of sitting on the couch all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Long story on, I'll keep it very brief. The love-hate also with hiding Earth caches. I got into hiding Earth caches because everybody told me it's not worth it. You can't get them published. It's impossible to do. And at that time, I had
a challenge.
Yeah, it was the challenge, right? Just the same reason I got into Where It Goes really hard is because everybody was like, it's not worth it. It's too much trouble. You have to learn all this stuff. I was like, okay, I'm in. Same thing with Earth cache. Everybody said you can't do it. And my history with hiding Earth caches and the positive and negatives of it are kind of like the history and evolution of Earth caches themselves. So if you go back and you do some older Earth caches, you know, it's a lot of them. Some of them are disappointing because you walk up and read a sign and then you can walk away. You didn't even have to look at the nature around you. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I knew when I started. So my very first one that I ever hid was in Rocky Mountain National Park. I went through all this, you know, all this rigmarole to get permission in the national, you know. And then it was just like you go up to a sign and read it. You barely even had to look into nature to do it. Now you did a little bit, but it was most information can be obtained from a sign. Well, that's not what earth caching is supposed to be, right? So much like people evolved earth caching over time, I did myself. So I got into it and I was like, well, if this is all it is, I'm not going to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. So I learned, I started looking at everybody else's earth caches, trying to learn just like you do with caching, right? Okay. Somebody put a bison in a stick. I can copy that. Let's do that. But as time went on, I didn't want to be a part of something that was just another version of LPCs or, you know, a pill bottle under a bush. So I started doing some research. This is how basic I went. Literally went and got Geology for Dummies. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. So started doing that and started reaching out to some people that actually knew geology. And it's starting to build more high quality earth caches, right? If I'm going to put something out there, I want it to be quality. I had to get my feet wet like everybody does, you know, hiding little simple hides. And then I would reach out to universities and download papers from the geology department about surrounding features in the area. Mm-hmm. And that's basically set up for earth caches. Now you have to take that and dumb it down quite a bit, right? Because nobody wants to go through a 3000 level course to get at one smiley. Yeah. But so then I started hating earth caches less when I found out it could be more involved and you could do a lot of tasks that were a lot of fun measuring and particles in a rock and water flow and things like that, that I think are pretty neat and interesting. That's when I kind of didn't hate them so much. And I got more into it and more into it and started building them in along trails and doing groups of them. So somebody could go out instead of hiking 2 hours and finding one earth cache that they may or may not enjoy. They can go out and find a series of five or six that are all interconnected and have a lot of fun with it. So I think just like if you look at some of the older earth caches, obviously some of them are awesome. We know that, right? But not everybody has awesome ones. you kind of see how they've gotten a little more sophisticated and people have hidden better and better ones. I tried to follow that as I was hiding more. So I ended up, because I know people struggle with earth caches, like I ended up building mine more interesting, but easier for the finder. So, because what I hated is you go and you had this complicated thing. I wanted to build them to where people could enjoy them without having a geology degree.
Yeah. It's kind of like trying to come up with something relatively unique about the location. Something neat that hasn't been done before, in a way, like that kind of makes the earth cache stand out more.
Right.
What I kind of like is, you know, we get into geocaching because there's a whole lot of exploration and discovery. Mm-hmm. And then earth caches, you're not actually finding a container, but hopefully the best ones, like you said, and like I like, are the ones that teach you something new. And, you know, you kind of have to be in the mindset of learning, but that's why earth caches can be so good, is because it's more than just learning. You're going to the location and you're doing something hands-on. You're finding something, discovering something you didn't know. And those tend to be the ones that, you know, for me as well, they stand out more.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you can make it more fun, right? A good example of that is one of the types you've probably seen of earth caches is where they take you to more than one location and you compare two different things you just learned about. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to have learned a little bit to be able to do a true comparison with that. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. Now it's a two-stage earth cache or more, but you're getting more into it. You're not just going off and checking and guessing, oh, I think the river's, you know, half a mile wide and the elevation here is so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You're really getting into it, and it's for the user more than it is for the owner. We've all seen earth caches out there where the owner wants to show you how smart they are. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, but it's not really for the owner. It's for the mm-hmm. person going to find it, right?
Yeah.
You're not trying to catch somebody dumb. Mm-hmm. You're trying to educate them a little bit and have them enjoy the experience. And
yeah.
I think that's what kind of flipped it for me. Mm-hmm. I have a policy that I'm not going to let anybody DNF one of mine. And I've had people DNF and they're just like, this is above my head. I couldn't figure it out. And I'm like, well, and I'll spend all day trying to convince them they actually know how to do it. Mm-hmm. I email them back and forth like, well, stop before you give up. Let's talk about this. What did you see while you're out there? Mm-hmm. And walk them through it and go, did you take a picture at all? Because, you know, we have the ALRs on these now again. And I'm like, they're like, yeah, I got it. Here's my picture. I'm like, cool. I know you're actually there. You're not just making it up. And we talk about it. And I say that's it. That's all you want to look for. Please change that to a smiley. You went there. You looked around. You had fun while you were there. That's the whole point of this. It's not to get a degree out of it. It's to enjoy yourself while you're out there in nature.
And that's a good point for ownership as well, because, you know, we say it doesn't have to be right or wrong answers. It shouldn't be right or wrong answers so that if you get it wrong, you can't log it found. Mm-hmm. You want them to have a good experience. And as an owner, you kind of have that flexibility of deciding, okay, yes, you've earned the smiley. You were there and you saw something. You've been able to recite it back to me, describe your experience and all that. Right. That's enough. Like, you had a good time, hopefully. And I think it's rare that somebody would ever be like, I don't care. I'm just going to log the DNF. Like, it's rare that would ever happen.
Well, logging DNFs is a whole different show, right? But, I don't think it should be a test at the end. Those ALR, the ALR additional logging requirements for an earth cache are just to prove that you were there. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't just couch log it or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the way I view it anyway. And, mm-hmm. Now one of the negative sides about owning is if you own a bunch of them, you need to have a commitment to communicate with the people that are going to log. And I own a lot currently. That makes it very difficult. That's a lot of emails that come in. And some of them are on trails. So there's like 11 on one trail and another one with like 7 or 8. Maybe it's even 9 on that trail. So you get the log and the email for 11 of them for every person in the group at one time. It can be a lot of emails coming in really quickly. And you're like, hey, you got it right. And tell all your friends that went with you they got it right too. Mm-hmm. But it's a commitment more than other caches, because generally with other caches, outside of a virtual, you're not really expected to or required to respond to anybody once they find it, unless there's a problem. Mm-hmm. With earth caches, you kind of are, right? I know you're required to, but I mean, you're kind of expected to, and you should interact with them, especially if there's any difficulty or if they have any further questions. And I've had people ask further questions that are interested in the topic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I can answer them and sometimes it's above my head. I'm like,
yeah,
you're gonna have to look it up, man, because I don't know that one. But Earth cash ownership, I think, is different than any other cash type.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely it is. And I'm kind of guilty of that as well because, yeah, after a while, when you first own a bunch of or an Earth cash or two, it's really easy to want to reply to everybody and thank them for their responses and then give them a little more information if they ask for it. And I'm kind of guilty of slowly moving away from that. I only have three Earth caches. And so nowhere near as many as you, but I still respond if there's issues or questions. But if everything is good and everything is right, I tend not to reply. And I think most people have kind of moved into that mindset. It's like, I've got all the information, send it off. I'm not expecting a reply from the owner saying, congratulations, you can log it. Because, well, I've already logged it because I sent all the information. So, I mean, that's a whole kind of a messy gray area. But I think it is definitely good if the Earthcash owner is willing and able to respond to any logs that come in, especially if they're passionate about what the Earthcash is about. Because if somebody's, like, done all this work and they've done the tasks and answered questions and it sounds like they're interested in it, then that's a great opportunity to proselytize whatever it is you're excited about.
Well, not only that, I think another additional benefit of owning one too is, well, there's a couple, but which people don't think about, and everybody has a different perspective on what is a benefit and what's not, right? But for me, I love to see people's photos when they're finding, as a cash owner. I just, that's to me, people are smiling, they're having fun, they're showing the pictures. They're showing pictures of what they think was cool about it. And you can require that on Earth Cash just to show they've been there, right? In most other cash types, you can't, other than a virtual, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a huge benefit because I've got pictures coming in constantly. And another benefit for me is my Earthcash are spread out across the country. So they're not just all in one location. So I get people from all over the place, find them all the time. And I enjoy seeing those photos. You can easily, as your logs are coming in, your email, you can see all the photos and stuff. And to me, that's just an added benefit.
Yeah. And you know, it just came to mind with all those photos. Like, I'm just thinking, you have so many people going through an Earth cache and then they all post photos. They're all kind of the same photo. They go to the coordinates and then take a picture and a selfie. And it's like, it seems kind of repetitive, but at the same time, just thinking about it, every time I look at the photos from say the Lundrangar, which I posted in Iceland, and I see people taking a selfie with that big lava, I forget the word now, go figure, in the background, and they're smiling and they enjoyed the hike and they think it's a really cool location. It's like reliving visiting that area, visiting that spot. And you kind of relive that experience yourself as an owner.
Absolutely.
When you see other people enjoying what you just published as well.
Yeah, that's just one of those things. Everybody, has a different favorite part of the game. And as far as cash owner, that, and then the other part's kind of selfish, but I'll put it out there anyway, right? Because we're numbers people at heart. Having Earth caches, other than emailing people back and forth, you don't really have to do a lot of maintenance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Simple fire and forget. You're not going to have to, unless there's a natural disaster, you're probably not going to have to do any maintenance to that area.
Mm-hmm.
But you do kind of passively collect favorite points. So it's kind of like net fishing, they just kind of roll in and your totals just keep going up because there's no the maintenance versus favorite point ratio is quite nice for Earth caches. So, if you have 10 or 11 Earth caches, that's a lot of them out there to be collecting favorite points that you're not having to run out and doing maintenance on, and you'll probably never have to archive. So from that side of it, if you care about favorite points and if that's one of your things, Earth caches are pretty neat way to clean up on that.
Yeah. And so even just looking through some of my Earth caches with the three I've got, I have one in Ontario, the grotto at Indian Head Cove, and it's at 125 favorite points, and so it's on the first page of Earth Caches in Canada by favorite points, which is kind of neat. How many?
And you have to do zero maintenance.
Yeah, yep.
That's pretty nice compared to the other caches, right?
Yeah, and there was one time I did have to do maintenance though because the parking issue changed with the provincial park up there.
Oh, okay.
So I had to make some changes to accessibility for the park, for the location. But the only maintenance you got to do on an Earth cache is if something changes physically with what's there,
right?
So it's not a whole lot of work to own it other than checking people's responses.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice, not just because maintenance is hard to do if you have a bunch of caches, but it's nice to know that every person's going to get the same experience when they go out there. Caches, physical caches that you hide, they move around, they migrate, right? People move them and they, so depending on what it is, people may get a different experience when they go out there. When they go out to Earth Cache, the mountain's still going to be there. The mountain's still going to be in the same place it was when you hit that Earth Cache. So you know the experience people are getting each time. Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we will dive into logging tasks and what it takes to claim an Earth Cache as a Smiley. This is TGIF, Geocaching Radio. And now, a quick word from Deadliest Cachers, seeking your help with the next major worldwide geocache creation project. Greetings, esteemed geocachers! It's time to start planning for the 2024 Operation Worldwide Cache Hide project. This year's theme is superheroes. If you're not familiar with how the project works, each year geocache hiders from all over the world come together for a mass publishing of themed geocaches. This year's theme is superheroes, and the publishing date is Sunday, April 28th, National Superhero Day. For complete details about the project, go to www.geocachingcentral.com and click on the Operation Worldwide Cache Hide icon. All hiders receive a digital participation badge that can be displayed on their geocaching profile page. Getting your local community involved makes for a fun time of caching on April 28th when the geocaches get published. So, who's ready to create some creative hides featuring superheroes? That's awesome, so mark that date on your calendar and watch for a whole bunch of new caches to get published. And it's convenient that April's cache hiding theme from HQ is colorful caches. And you know how bright some superheroes just love to dress. So recently I also posted a couple of posts on Facebook asking people for their most memorable logging tasks. And so a lot of people chimed in with what I felt are some very, very common Earth Cache logging tasks, and then also a few rarer ones. And those rare ones are the ones that kind of that people remember the most because they stand out from everything else. But like some of these common tasks, I think that that Earth Cache owners get you do are things like estimating flow rates of rivers, springs, and tides. Yeah. Either watching and kind of guessing or tossing something into the water. You ever played the poo sticks?
No, not that. But I have done the estimating the water flow, mm-hmm. which it's fun the first time you do it.
Exactly. Another one.
Some of those things are hard too, though, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Another one that I've had to do once so far is testing the pH or the acidity of water. That's one that you have to go and get. Buy a kit from somewhere so that you can run this little test to find out the result of the color, if the water is shaded or not, and what the acidity level of the water is, which I think that one's a neat one. And it's also a relatively easy one if you're doing an earth cache that has water in it, especially if it's mm-hmm. like a spring with fresh water or not. You can test how good and clean the water is.
I like that. I like the ones where you have to physically interact with the environment. So mm-hmm. feeling like how coarse a certain rock is, or, mm-hmm. How dense it is. It's scratchable, things like that. The water, I like the water, the pH. I've seen a few where, I'm trying to remember, clinometer. That's probably not right. I've had a few, and I did them in groups, and it said clearly on the cache page, you need this specific tool mm-hmm. to complete this earth cache, so that, the difficulty in terrain reflect that or whatever. But there's actual tools for, geologist tools that you can incorporate into an earth cache.
Yeah.
Now, the amount of people that'll do those probably go down, but the experience goes way up. I mean, how neat is that? You get to pretend like you're Indiana Jones, and, it's kind of cool. And you think you're all cool with your little geology tools and stuff?
there's an upside and a downside to that, because the upside of earth caches that require a tool is they're definitely more interactive and hands-on, mm-hmm. and you've got to be prepared. The downside is if you're traveling through somewhere and you're looking for a cache to find or an earth cache to do and it requires something, you can't finish it. Like, you'd have to go and find the tool and come back, like buy it or come back. And if you're just traveling through, you kind of got to throw up your shoulders and say, I can't even do it, so I may as well move on.
Right. So there's that is true. But that's with any cache type, right? I mean, if you're traveling through and you don't have a ladder with you, there's certain ones you're not going to be able to get, right? So as long as there's, you know, a big variety, that's okay. You wouldn't want everyone to be like a, you have to have a full geology kit to do it, right? Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, having those unique ones out there, I think are, that's a pretty good opportunity to do something different.
Yeah. And if the tool is easy to use or there's instructions and it's not a complicated task, then I think that's a lot more accessible for people as well. And it can open some eyes to the kind of things that you've, that geology is about. You know, they may, may never have used an acidity test before. And mm-hmm. this is, it's like, oh, this is actually kind of neat. Learned something today.
Yeah. It's like going back to high school geology class, isn't it?
Another couple of common ones. We've got tides. If you live near an ocean, then there's quite a few earth caches that get people mm-hmm. to go out somewhere when the tide is low. And those, from what I've seen, they tend to be 5 terrain or 4.5 to 5 terrain because, it's a risk. It's a life risk. You've got to watch the tide mm-hmm. timing, but you get to see dry ground, effectively dry ground, where nobody would have seen it like that before, and hopefully you're not like hip deep in mud, but but that seems to be fairly common along ocean shorelines and whatnot.
There's one here similar to that, and it's involving caves, and the cave you can only get to during certain times.
Yeah.
So it's out, you know, towards the ocean or whatever, but it's when the water's back, you can see and access it, but when the water's not, you can't.
Yeah. That'd be really neat.
There's some danger involved in that, right?
Yeah, you don't want to get trapped.
No, that's just, we've all seen those horror movies. I'm not going to be part of that, but they can be. And now, again, there's a thing to think about. I mean, geocaching itself, inherently, there's a risk in get out in nature, right? Mm-hmm. But the further you go out in nature, the more risk there is. So
yeah,
earth caches can be dangerous.
Yep. And hopefully those are high difficulty or high terrain, so people are at least aware of what they might be getting.
Yes, let's hope they're done properly. They're labeled properly.
Yeah. Another fairly common one that you see out there is fossil hunting. So if you go places around shores again as well, where there's lots of rocks or boulders or caves, the owner might get you to examine closely the rock wall and see if you can find fossils or that sort of thing. And that's really common in some of these areas.
There's one like that in Denver. The one in Canada was an offshoot of that. It was interesting though. So that's what reminded me of it. It was in years ago. I went up there and I think Land Monkey owned it. Mm-hmm. But you had to go to the walls, and this wall, it was a museum and it was outside. And they actually intentionally, there was panels along the wall that were all different types of stone.
Land Monkey, because that's he's in BC. We have one like that in Toronto or the Toronto.
This area. Is West Coast area. Huh.
Well, then there's another one here too.
There you go. Continue. He may have copied. I don't know. Or they may have copied off him. I don't know. I know Land Monkey's big into earth caches. So, but you had to try to. They intentionally had different stone types around the building. Mm-hmm. Big panels of it, and you'd have to go based on the chart that you had and try to identify and. That was a pretty neat one. And you can, you can feel it, knock on it. You can see the little particles and everything. And you can identify all these stone types around this building. It wasn't fossils, but it was neat that you're still interacting with geology, but it was on a university campus, I believe, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But that's great. That's creative. That's interesting. And it's not something you would think of. I mean, that's definitely not walk up and read a sign, right?
Right. And that brings me to another one that I wrote down was describing rocks and minerals by their visual or texture or composition. Mm-hmm. That is so, so very common. I think it's actually pretty easy to make those kind of earth caches because there's a few places just in town around here where construction workers or whatever, when they're making parking areas, have used large boulders that have been taken from some mine or something like that. And then there might be a little sign near it explaining where the boulders came from, and then the earth cache owner would be like, oh, this is kind of neat information, so you can read that and find out about the different types of rocks, and then you got to examine these boulders and then describe what the texture's like and find this type of rock and which, like those kind of questions. And they can be in the middle of urban downtown areas. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if there's a museum that decided to use special rocks in their construction, then you've got a geology texture type earth cache right there.
Or the those are fun way. And that's what I tried to evolve mine to later. Mm-hmm. touch, feel what you can do. The one we have on the trail out by Mingo, it's not close to Mingo, but it's in that area. One of the ones, and with full permission of the park, there's a big stone sign at the beginning, and you're testing the, I think it's Mohs hardness scale. Is that right? The hardness scale, whatever it is. I forget the name of it right now. But you scratch it with your fingernail, you scratch it with a penny, you scratch it with a key. The harder the object it takes, you know, the harder the rock or whatever, and you scratch and interact. And there was a list of four or five things you could try. And that's how you could tell generally where it was on that hardness scale. Mm-hmm. That's fun. That's interactive, right?
Yeah.
But things where you touch like and that. Move and do things like that, those are fun. And, or even a rock that where, you know, let's say it's the rock example, but there's not a sign nearby. So you have to interact with the rock that's there, but also look on the cache page and care. That's where you're getting your information from instead of a sign. So you have to both read and interact. I think those are fun because you're kind of forced to learn a little bit. Yeah. You're not just walking up, it's black and moving off. You know, I mean, it's, there's more. And I think those are the ones that I tend to enjoy a lot more. So I try to put those out more for people.
Yeah, and you made a good point there because, like you said, there's more interaction. You're not just gathering information. You're taking the information you used and then trying to answer a question or perform a task. You know, you're attempting to learn something and apply it. And those are the ones that tend to stand out more.
Oh, yeah.
And all these, the tasks that I just mentioned earlier, they're common tasks because they're easy, but they're more observational. Go there, look, and describe. You're not so much necessarily doing something that you've learned, you're just taking information and then kind of repeating it in a certain context. Whereas there's a number of responses that came in that are more rare tasks. I thought that a couple of them were interesting because they're a little outside of the box. Like one person mentioned that they had to measure dinosaur footprints and then estimate the speed of that dinosaur.
Oh, I like that.
So, because you kind of have to understand a little bit about the dinosaur biology and how big their foot would be and how big the body would be, and then kind of guesstimate what they're walking, whether they're walking or running maybe, and what their speed would have been when those prints were made. You know, so that's a little more application of information, which I thought was kind of a rare, potentially very fun task.
When if you're looking at the big picture, as many of us do, right, we think about families. How fun is that for a kid? Right? I mean, you're talking about dinosaurs. First of all, dinosaurs are always awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're a kid, dinosaurs are awesome.
Yeah.
So instead of just like, oh, well, it's a big rock and, you know, it's slanted because of that's how it came out and they, you know, a kid doesn't care about that as much. Mm-hmm. If you're measuring dinosaur footprints to see how fast he's running, that's fun for a kid. So now your geocaching day just became a lot more fun for them. So that's, I love that experience, the experience that it provide for a family or just me. I'd have fun with that one too. But that's it's a great like, experience for a family.
Yeah. And it's almost like interactive tasks for Earth caches are like the gadget caches of physical containers.
Absolutely. They're not going to be for everybody, but for the ones that enjoy it, they're going to get a lot of, and you know, a lot of fun out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one that stood out that I think I may have done once or twice was the Earth cache owner actually asked you to taste the spring water, not just measure its temperature.
I've done that. Or its flow. Yeah, I've done one of those.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now you've got to take a risk. Are you going to fill up a container and take a sip of water that's been just flowing down the rocks? Are you that brave? And
that's funny.
There was one that I remember. I was on a road trip, and I can't remember which road trip, but it was at a natural spring. And it was built up enough, I think it was in central Ontario somewhere, but a very popular spring that people come in and there's just always people collecting water from this spring because it's like free, fresh water. And so everybody's filling up their containers. And I remember, I think some people were saying, you shouldn't just go and drink water from there. You should like make sure that it's safe. And I'm like, everybody going there is collecting water to take home.
Yeah, you
know, it's spring water, so... It's like, it's another one of those things that, that you're not asked to do very often. And, so when you come up to it, it's almost like a dare.
I have actually done one of those and I thought it was really neat.
Yeah. And then even just the taste of water that comes from a spring can be a little bit different. Because there's different types of springs as well. There's the springs that come from just down a hill in the rocks and stuff. And if you're out hiking, you might learn how to properly test and make sure the water is okay, because you don't necessarily want to. But then there's also things like artesian wells that are natural wells of water that people might use for as a water source. And those are all things you can learn about in earth caches.
The one I had was mineral water. It was a mineral springs that was coming up, and you could definitely taste. It did not taste like water fountain water. It was totally different, yeah. Different. And it gave you an idea of what it could taste like as opposed to what mineral was in there. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely tell the difference. It was an interesting one. So that was a fun one.
Yeah. And there is a little bit of learning there as well, because if you know that the person who is creating it has said it is safe to drink this water, then right. You have an opportunity to, with trust, believe and try something that you may never have tried before. It's like, mm-hmm. if you were just out in nature, you might not be confident to, say, drink and test that spring water. But if somebody else here says, this is safe to drink, try it. And then you try it and you realize it does taste different. Now you know, you kind of have a gauge to say, the water that I drink every day tastes like this. The water that comes from a safe spring tastes like this. And now you've just kind of enlarged your experience of what safe water to drink would taste like. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a neat little benefit of that sort of...
You do learn something.
Yeah, sort of earth cache task. All right, let's take another breather before we chat a bit about using signs in earth caches and what the purposes of an earth cache really should be. This is TGIF Geocaching Radio. It is time for Cachely Corner, and big, big news. The long-awaited version 8 has been released, made available literally moments before the 2024 eclipse even, and with it, a major new format, Cachely Pro. Cachely has always been a fully featured purchase once iOS app, and this new version is still feature-rich for any geocacher to use, but with all the work and support put into keeping the app great and leading the pack, it only makes sense that you can now subscribe to Pro for access to an advanced feature set that's been under development for a long time, including Pro offline maps with more options and which are regularly updated, and previously purchased maps will remain accessible, just no longer updated without Pro. Also, a live map for auto-loading caches, statistic analysis like the DeLorme grid in the US, and also counties and region coloring, management of online draft logs instead of only submitted from the app, plus many, many more updates. And then also coming soon in version 8.1, Cachely will include multi-user support, active track logs, and CarPlay. I have so been waiting for active track logs instead of switching between a GPS app for tracking and the map with caches on it. All of these details and many more updates can be found explained on cachely.com and by links that you can find in this episode's show notes. So thank you to Cachely for sponsoring the episode. It is the quintessential epitome of geocaching on iPhone, and no other app compares to it in features and quality. It's only a few bucks a month or a year, and I highly recommend it, whether you're a veteran geocacher or just getting started in the hobby. Find it in the App Store or visit cachely.com, www.cachely.com.
So, why do you think people don't hide more earth caches? You think it's just not worth the effort to them?
That's a good point, because a good question, because recently in the forum there was a thread that came up about the history of geocaches and how the rules have changed. And in one of the comments, somebody said that it seems like earth cache publishers have slowed down a lot, and it may well be because they're kind of tightening up on the sorts of things that are required for earth caches. So I mm-hmm. think it's almost like they're encouraging earth cache owners to be more intentional about the tasks that they're requiring people to do. So I think it's a lot more work to create one, an earth cache that would be approved, and two, an earth cache that would be fun and interactive and educational, which mm-hmm. is what they're kind of pushing for. I think like one of the things that I actually didn't know because I've found so many earth caches that have this. You're apparently, since about 2013 or 2010 or so, not allowed to require information from a sign.
Right.
But I found so many caches that require that just
their grandfathered in, yeah.
Yeah, like what's the information on this sign at this waypoint, and then that's the answer to the question.
Yeah.
And those, I think, they're a dime a dozen. They're all over the place because there's so many signs, and it's just easy to be like, okay, I'm here. Oh, I want to publish an earth cache, take a picture of the sign, and then make your questions later. Copy paste a block of text from somewhere about whatever it was. And so those were so easy to publish, so there's a bunch of those. So I think now we're seeing fewer earth caches, but probably more intense questions and tasks.
Yeah. And the truth is, going and reading a sign is a virtual or lab cache. It's not an earth cache.
Right.
You're not really doing any geology, anything. You're just reading an answer off a sign, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the way them getting rid of that is a good thing, because even though it's harder to publish one because you can't cheat through using a sign, now you're actually going to have to do your own research on the area and stuff like that. It lends to a better experience. Mm-hmm. Parking your car, walking 2 feet, looking at a sign, getting the answers, and jump back in your car and driving off, you're not getting the earth cache experience.
Yeah.
You're not walking down a trail. You're not looking at a mountain. You're not, you know, you're not watching streams or flow, or you're not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that, you might as well just put a virtual out.
Yeah.
Right. Or a lab cache. You can do 5 then. You don't have to get out of your car. Just click them and guess. Right. Yeah. So I'm happy about that change. And you hear a lot of times too with they've changed the rules over time because of saturation. Mm-hmm. Waterfalls is a good example of that. There's tons of waterfall earth caches out there, but you can't publish one now because they were so easy. People publish those really quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got enough, you know. Imagine if a reviewer could say, we have too many LPCs in this town. Find something else to do. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome, right? But they can't do that. Earth cache reviewers can actually do that.
Yeah.
They can say, we've done this. We've got enough of these.
Yeah.
Because there's no proximity issues. Mm-hmm. They've got to do it by subject, right? So,
well, yeah, and because it's also the GSA, the Geological Society of America, or whatever, and they, so they're kind of a different batch of reviewers for earth caches than for physical or typical geocache types. So, thinking about what an earth cache is required to have, I think there's really only two. There's either two or three, but I think there's two essentials. One of them is proof of visit. So there's got to be something that somebody does to prove that you were actually there. And most often that's take a picture, either a selfie of yourself or of something out there for privacy concerns, something, but with like your hand or GPS or a piece of paper with your name or something like that. To say this is you and this is your photo. And then the other one is that task, something, I think there was also something hands-on you had to do at the location. So I'm not sure if that fell under proof of visitation or a hands-on task.
Yeah, the way it's kind of generally explained, I've talked to several, well, we both have, right? We've talked to several earth cache reviewers. We're fortunate enough that we get to talk to some people behind the scenes sometimes. And the way it's explained to me is what they don't want you to do, like a simple one they would do a lot of times is that people would ask, what's the elevation where you're at? Well, that can be found on Google Maps.
Yeah.
So they're trying to find things where it's very difficult for people to fake them. It's an actual proof of being at the location, something that you can't Google, something that you can't guess, something that you can't get from the photos that are already on the earth cache, you know, but not something that's just laborious for the point of making more questions, right?
Right.
Measure this, measure this, measure this. If that doesn't have anything to do with the lesson, there's no reason to do that. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to find that balance between interaction, proving that you're there, and then just giving a million questions just to be that person.
Yeah.
Right. Which we know there's bad owners of all cache types out there, but you know, the ones that are trying to catch you not getting it right, those are not good for anybody in the game.
Yeah.
But there should be a level of, okay, you actually were there.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, I think they're working towards the wording of the guidelines, which lean towards a learning activity. So not just something that, like, okay, test the water and tell me your reading. It's like, okay, now what can you apply with that knowledge?
Absolutely. Tell me absolutely. Findings.
So some kind of hands-on learning task. Hazoy, who is a reviewer in the US, he basically described it like, Good Earth cache tasks are tied to the lesson. Have cachers observe something, then ask them to tell you what the significance of that observation is based on the lesson. Don't just tell me that the thing was a color. Apply the lesson right. And tell me why it was color.
Absolutely. I love that too. And I love those type of questions. One, because you can't get it wrong. Mm-hmm. When you're asking, like, you pick up data, that's mm-hmm. right or wrong. That's fine. Within a range. But then why do you think it is? Well, I can't get that wrong. Well, you ask me what I think.
I can tell you macaroni.
Yeah. I mean, if you give a legitimate opinion at all, if they're asking you what you think about something, you can't really get that wrong. But to come up with an opinion, you have to pay attention to what you're doing. So and I think that's a great one because it doesn't set it up like you're not going to be able to pass this test, right? Yeah. That's not the feeling you should get from those ALRs. Yeah. It should be, you know, what's your experience like? It's basically like forcing somebody to tell a story of what they interacted with, right?
Yeah.
Which we can't do. We wish we all know that's what we wish we could do for every geocache. If you're going to log this, you got to write a decent log at the end of it. Yeah. We can't do that, you know. There's a lot of things about Earth caches that we wish we could make all caches like.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's about as long as they respond in some manner as though they're attempting to answer the question, mm-hmm. then they're putting effort into it, then that's the least you can ask for.
Yes, you know, that's what I'm saying. That's perfect.
I mean, if they just try to couch log and either don't send you answers or send you gibberish, I mean, obviously that's basically a couch log. That's not even trying. That's not even making an attempt. Yeah. So as long as they make an attempt, then you don't ask questions that are right or wrong, then that's kind of the style that I think they're pushing for.
And I agree with that. I support that 100%.
As long as your Earth cache is not a go and find this sign and give me the information on the sign, then thumb up.
Yeah.
The signs are very common and they're easy, but they have downsides. They do have upsides, but they have some downsides. Like I think anybody who owns an Earth cache or has done an Earth cache or acquiring a sign knows that the signs can change. They're quite often updated, potentially mm-hmm. year after year or every few years. They can be removed. If there's construction, they can disappear. It's more like you're just parroting information rather than actually learning. And like you said, if you're going to do something like get information off a sign, then make it a virtual.
Right.
Because that's effectively your answer that you were there. You're like in a virtual, you don't have to learn anything. In Earth cache, mm-hmm. you should learn something, not just parrot right. something.
Which in fairness, that's very different than any other cache type. Mm-hmm. You don't have to learn anything to do most caches, right?
Right.
Some of the puzzles you do, but most cache types, you're just, you know, hide and seek is all we're playing. It's a grown up hide and seek.
Yeah. But an intentionally different experience.
Yes, it is a very different experience.
But there are some other upsides as well. Somebody mentioned that they can still be used as a starting point for a lesson. I think one reviewer put it in a way that as an owner, you can use signs, but you can't force the finder to use a sign.
Right, right.
Like that's one way of looking at it. So yeah, you can get information for a lesson from the sign.
Yeah.
And they could find that information on the sign, but the question should not be, what is the information on the sign?
Agreed. And it's a good place to start, right? Because, you know, geology is one of those things, if you don't know much about it, you just walk up to a mountain, you go, how do I make an earth cache here, right? Or a river. But if it gives you a jumping off point of like, this is a, whatever it is, right? There's a fault here or whatever's there. You can then go and research and make that a very robust earth cache. But you started from that location and you feel confident that you identified the right thing because it's on the sign, right? But you can ask other questions based on that. And it kind of helps you out as an earth cache hider because you feel, you know, you feel that you're right on because unless you, you know, I've looked at a bunch of things before. And when I was trying to find something to make up creative earth caches, I would find a location. I would take a bunch of pictures. I'd go back and research. Then a lot of times I would email somebody that has a lot more knowledge than me. Mm-hmm. And they would go, yeah, I see why you think this, but this is what you actually need to know. And I'm like, man, I wasn't close. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of those things out there that can be interpreted differently. And it's a good, I think those signs are a great jumping off point to, if you want to hide your first earth cache or hide an earth cache, it gives you a point to start researching.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be super complicated or difficult question. You know, it's something to look for. Like that was kind of a positive that I made note of as well. It's like earth caches, it's educational, but if you have to look for a sign, then maybe you don't provide the exact waypoint of the sign. Like just say, when you're here in this facility or this small park or something, then there's information here that you need to find that includes this. So find this answer, and then it gives you something to find, kind of like a geocache, which I think is a little bit of an up. It could also be there are multiple signs, and there could be like a series of the signs. So you're getting information as you're walking through from the start to the end. And that in itself could be a kind of experience, because the park or whatever decided to reveal information in an educational way from setting out to the end. And so you could kind of make use of that structure in your Earth cache as well.
Yeah, there's tons of ways to be creative and use that information to build from there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah, the one other huge downside that I find to signs is in practice, in my area at least, we have a whole lot of group caching. So there's a lot of people that go out with more than just a couple of friends. And quite often with these simple Earth caches, these grandfathered sign information required Earth caches, one person finds it, notes down the information, sends the information for the entire group. Everybody says, Joe sent in the information for me, and I'm logging it found, and there's nothing you can do. It's like they didn't learn anything. They just, it became kind of a, Earth caches of a simple nature have become kind of just a smiley on the map. Like it's not, it's a statistic.
Right. Now, the same thing could be said for a group going out Earth caching. One person can pass the answers off anyway, right?
Yeah.
Now you have the additional requirement of a photo there. So you know they actually went. They're not just passing it to all their friends, but it's just like a puzzle cache, right? Mm-hmm. One person solves it in a group, everybody's not solving that puzzle cache.
That's
going to be an up and down for any cache type, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The difference, though, again, is that with Earth caches, the push is to try to educate and learn
in a fun way. Yeah, absolutely. And you hope they're going to have the experience. And I think if you have a sign, nobody's going to care about that as much. But if you have an experience there, like a fun experience, measuring the water or scratching a rock or, you know, filling the sand to see how coarse it is or any of those things like that, that's going to kind of encourage people to want to interact more than if you're just walking up looking for an information flow rate on a sign, right?
Yeah, you kind of pique that curiosity. So if your Earth cache is actually interesting, you might actually snag some people who would otherwise just want the stat.
Yes.
There's always going to be people who like, can you just send me the information and I'll log it separately or I'll just log it for us. There's always going to be people who just want to do that. But at least if the Earth cache is something that they might just want to do.
Yeah.
You know, the photo required is one thing that helps make sure that people are at least there. So, they might have been in for the picture and then they were there, but they might not answer anything else. The other thing that I think we're allowed to do as Earth cache owners is require individuals to send in their own answers. So if a group of 10 go and one person can send in the answers for everybody, you could say in the description saying, you must send in the answers yourself in order to log it found. Yeah, they could still send the answers around and everybody sends in the same answers, but at least that's one other thing that they have to do towards, you know, actually earning that Earth cache.
I see that point, however. So let me offer a counterpoint to that. I am very appreciative when a group sends me one group email. Mm-hmm. Specifically, like I have some series of caches that are all along a trail. Like I have one, I think that's 12 on one trail. Well, you get the log of, you know, 1 through 10 found it. Mm-hmm. So you got 10 people finding 12 caches. That's 120 logs, 120 emails. If they're also each individually sending all 12 answers, you're more now at like 240 emails for one day for one set of. That's a unique experience because you have a whole group of them, but that's a lot of emails all of a sudden. Yes. So if that becomes two emails instead, I'm happy.
Yeah.
It'll still be 13, but you know, I'm happy if they're doing it as a group, not like I found it with, you know, Jim Bob last week, but we went out as a hiking group today and found all this. That's good.
It'd be something that as an owner, you'd have to make that judgment call and decide, am I willing to have to deal with that or not? Because, I mean, for instance, if you create an Earth cache that you know is going to be really popular, you might not require everybody to send it in. Even if you want to make sure that everybody is doing it, you might not want to deal with that.
Absolutely.
Whereas if you know that it's popular, but it's very rare, and you know that people are going to try to couch log or they're just going to try to drive through Earth Cache, then you might require that.
Yeah.
So and that's, that's your choice. I think the owner is.
I mean, that's how much time you have. And it's my fault that I put out so many Earth Caches not thinking. one of which was on a geo tour, lots of emails in Rocky Mountain National Park, which is an extremely popular park. And it was part of the geo tour. So I got tons of emails on that one. And then two other groups were in groups of them along a hiking trail. So you generally get, you know, 8 to 12 finds per person in a single day with that. And they are usually done in groups. So it's multiple. That's something to consider though, right? You know, I am less overall concerned with somebody couch logging one of mine and it slipping through than I am somebody going out. I'm more concerned about somebody going out and having a bad experience. Mm-hmm. I don't want somebody to go out and have a bad experience or think that they can't log one because I have a different, you know, some of mine are super easy. Some of mine are a little more complicated, not complicated, but a little more involved in with the information you're collecting and you're also hiking at the same time.
Yeah.
That makes it more difficult. The ratings, you know, I have that 5-1 and a 5 difficulty, 1 terrain. That's hard. That's a hard one. And it should be at a 5 difficulty, right?
Yep.
We haven't even touched on the discussion of, you know, what level of geology experience you should have, but you know, I don't want somebody to be intimidated enough that they're not going to try to log it.
Yeah.
I try to watch really good. Like if somebody says, I'm confused, does this count as an answer? I really try to make sure I reach out to them and go, absolutely. This is, you know, and explain what's going on. And I'll even send them a little blurb. This is what I intended. Here's what you saw. That shows me you're there and you experienced it. So don't, Please make it a smiley, not a frowny. And I've had DNFs on Earth Caches before.
And I think a good rule of thumb to, if you're creating an Earth Cache and you want people to actually want to do it, is to try to think of at least one kind of button thing, something that stands out for whatever you're trying to teach. Like, so whether it's an activity or whether it's doing something to see or experience something that is rare or unique, something that stands out and is memorable that the person will want to do or experience and makes the Earth Cache stand out. Because and something that can't just be done by a Google or, you know, something unique and interesting and that teaches and that, you know, it's a reward. You do the Earth Cache and you come away thinking, I now know more than I did before and my horizons have expanded a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would... since I moved about a year and a half ago, a little bit over a year and a half ago now, I haven't done any Earth Caches here. It's a completely different environment. So I've got to learn a whole new set of, you know, geological features here. I do plan on getting back into it eventually. At the same time, I'm kind of pretty deep into having a bunch of them right now. So I don't know how many additional ones I want to put out. Because I consider that a commitment, right? Emailing people back, I consider that a commitment. And I'm not able to catch everybody because it's hard. You know, I try to get to them, but it's not as timely as I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
But there's so much, unlike other geocache types, there's so much to learn. And geology is, as stupid as it sounds, it's literally all over the world. I know that's a dumb way to say that, but it is about our world, right? And there's a lot of things that you can do to make it a fun experience. You know, a lot of times when you put out a puzzle cache or you put out a where I go, a where I go is a good example. That's the other one that's really complicated for people, right? Well, we know that you can spend a lot of time putting out a where I go and people can just crack the code and go to the final. We all know that happens all the time, right? There's tons of online crackers for it. But in Earth Cache, you kind of have to get there and experience it. Even if you're wrong, you're still experiencing it. You can't just like cut through to the answer. You got to take a picture there. And you've got to at least look around to see it. So it's kind of closer to the hider's intention than a lot of other cache types.
Yeah. It's almost like the intent of the cache type is a lot more streamlined to the experience of the cache type.
Right.
Really, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
A container is a lot easier to log as found with fewer restrictions or limitations than an Earth cache, which you kind of have to experience stuff in order to log it as found anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of throwdowns for Earth caches. So
yeah.
The other biggest complaint I hear about people and why they don't publish them, which makes me laugh, and you'll know why, is they say it's too hard to get permission. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, you mean like you're supposed to be doing it on all the caches you had? But there's no point in picking that fight, right? Yes. With an Earth cache, they actually hold you to the standard, like, oh, you got permission from the national park? Good. Who? What's their email? You know? Mm-hmm. Normally people are like, when they're hiding a regular cache, oh yeah, I got permission. It's good. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. You didn't ask any, you didn't interact with anybody. You snuck it onto Walmart's parking lot and left, yeah. You know? So I love that standard. And, you know, I hate that that's the reason that people won't hide it because hide them. Cause I find out that nobody's getting permission for anything anyway.
It puts more effort into the creation process. Cause you've got to have contacts. You've got to find somebody and you've got to ask. I had that because I have a 5 difficulty 1 terrain cache, and it was posted on a public sidewalk at a downtown park, not on any property. It's like perfectly open public, but the reviewer still wanted me to have permission from somewhere from the city to be able to publish this Earth cache, even though you're just walking around a sidewalk around a park. It's a one terrain.
Yeah.
But they still wanted to have that permission. So I had to go searching and trying to find the right contacts. I think I was jumped around a couple of times before I got somebody to talk to and have a record of, yeah, no, that's fine. It sounds great.
But isn't it nice when you have that explicit permission though? Mm-hmm. I mean, you definitely want to, if you went to all that trouble, you're going to make sure your cache page is nice. You're going to make sure the experience is nice. You want it to be the best you can be because you're not skulking around hiding something, right? You're making a good experience for everybody involved. I think it just, like, people like gadget caches. Usually if you have a gadget, well, I don't say usually. People that had gadget caches, because we drew that parallel earlier, that's in the open a lot of times, right? So you're going to make sure wherever you have it, you have permission to do it. Well, it emboldens you after that. You really want to put a lot of effort into it because now there's not just cashers that are seeing it. The property owner knows it's there. There's like a lot. You're holding yourself out a little more into public, and I think that's a good thing for caching.
Yeah. And hitting pause on that thought for a moment, when we come back, we will take a look at deleting logs, helping loggers, FTFs, DNFs, and a few more earth caching tips. This is TGIF Geocaching Radio. You know, I often ramble off a little scripted segment about supporting Cache the Line and this podcast through Patreon, but with the beginning of the year 2024, I just wanted to say something a little different. I'm sincerely grateful to all of you who opt in to support the channel, the podcast, and the brand. It really is a lot of work to put together content, whether it's video or audio or events, or even helping to promote the hobby over social media. And there are so many people in the community now who really help to provide an amazing network of connected geocachers and content providers, from bloggers and vloggers, photographers, travelers and podcasters, to just standout personalities, like the illustrious Joshua, the geocaching vlogger. But it's thanks to those of you who support in whatever way you're able, whether financially, through kind words of encouragement, through sharing content and interacting, answering questions and helping others in the community, that keep us going, who give us motivation to keep creating, or just to help fund the costs and time and equipment needed to produce entertaining, promotional, and engaging content. I really do hope that you enjoy what Cache the Line creates and stands for, and if you would like to join the growing band of excellent geocaching adventurers who pitch in to help keep the ball rolling here, just visit patreon.com/cachetheline. Where you'll find a few options for contribution from as little as the cost of a cup of coffee per month to annual support with a bonus discount, and see what other bonuses you may receive and unlock as a thank you for your generosity. And now, if you've been following the GeoCoin Project EGA, you'll also know that patrons who have purchased GeoCoins will also be receiving special signature stickers of Tiny Tim and Sir Maximus. So visit patreon.com/cachetheline for all the details, and thank you so, so much for your support. So a few more quick questions because we're okay. Nearing our time. Have you ever deleted an Earth Cache find log?
Yes, I have. And I don't do it unless I know somebody absolutely has not found it. Mm-hmm. So I had that one of my earlier caches on that Geo Tour in Rocky Mountain National Park. Somebody logged it, which that's not suspicious, but they logged all the other earth caches in that park on the same day and some in another state on the same day. Mm-hmm. And it was an account that was obviously bogus. Mm-hmm. I did have to delete one of those. I consulted the other people, one of which they claimed they, and it wasn't like I'm catching up on logs. It was, I found these today. One of which you couldn't legally get to. So yeah. I knew they were lying. It was one of those areas that was blocked off that you could not get to, an impassable area. So that was one I knew that was obvious couch log. They claimed like 100 in that one day, which you couldn't even physically make it to all those locations. So I did have to do that. I've had a couple of brand new cachers. By brand new, I mean like finds in the teens.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. Find an earth cache. And this was a while back. I don't think they can even see them now. The way it's currently set up with the non-pay structure versus pay structure. But they found them and I tried to contact them and I never got anything from them. There was no email log or whatever. You know, a lot of people forget. I'll email them like, oh yeah, yeah, here's the answers. Mm-hmm. These people hadn't found really any caches. You could tell they were just kind of phone logging and didn't know what they were doing. I've had to delete those. I've never had to delete any that were legitimate people going out to find them.
Right.
Right. Like, even if they can't figure it out, we can talk enough where they can get it.
Yeah.
I've never had to delete one like that. It's only been true couch logs or somebody got the phone app and didn't know what they were doing, that kind of deal.
Yeah. It's been kind of close for me. Like, there's been one or two maybe where somebody did half the work and then I had to deliberate, like, should I delete it or not? Because they didn't do all that was required. And it's like, whatever. Okay, we'll just let them go. But like you, I've had a couple that one was a recently new geocacher who was in the area because, you know, you check their recent finds around that time and there's a couple other caches and earth caches in there, but they have never sent anything in. It's like, oh, this is a really cool area. And that was it. Right. So I contacted him and he was like, oh yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't read the description. I didn't know that there were questions. And so it's an opportunity to explain what an earth cache is. And, you know, I've encountered cache owners who will delete your log if you don't send in answers within a day or two of posting it or. And so, you know, I explain, okay, the importance and significance of an earth cache is that you learn something and you answer the questions, and cache owners by the guidelines are obligated to delete logs of people who don't do the cache, right? So as a warning, in the future, you might come up with cache owners who will just write out delete your logs. So there's a little bit of a the more you know type of thing. Here's what you've got to do. And I trust you were there. So maybe you can think about some answers and, you know, and the questions and everything. I think the problem is on the mobile app, I think this has come up in discussions before, the description is relegated down to a button below the hint. So people don't even think about reading the description. And then they come to an earth cache and don't know, and they're there and they take a picture and then go and that's it. And they don't really learn anything.
I've had similar experiences to that. I've had somebody that didn't know what they're doing. I emailed them back. They could tell there was a new. Now, I've never just hit delete without, of course, I'm an online snooper kind of. So I go check the profile, check the cache they've done. I check everything into it. But I've emailed people back and they were like, oh, I had no idea I couldn't find anything. I didn't know what was going on. So I thought I just took a picture, and I've told them about it and they liked it. And we've had conversations.
Yeah.
I think I've connected with, outside of where I go, I've connected with more people around earth caches by emailing them back and them responding and us getting into conversations like that extended for a while. Mm-hmm. Around earth cache more than any other cache type. I've even had people that have said, oh, this is neat. I've been in the game for a while. I've never really published one of these. I see you've done a bunch, you know, you got any tips? And I'm like, not only have tips, let's do one. Mm-hmm. And I've helped people publish earth caches. I've helped them build the whole things and publish them. And, you know, I know that they would never ask that much, but I'm like, yeah, let's do it. I'm like, that only helps everybody.
Yeah,
you know, I'm by no means an expert, and I'm by no means a geology expert for sure, or an earth cache expert. Mm-hmm. But I know how to do them, and I found them, and I've hidden them. And anytime I can help somebody else hide them anywhere they are, why would I not do that? That's just good geocaching etiquette, right? I've done the same with puzzles and challenges and everything else. I've contacted somebody or back and forth, and help people work through things because it's. I would want other people to do that for me. Mm-hmm. If I'm confused about something, and I did have that in the beginning, I had people that walked me through things and showed me things. Like I literally had somebody give me a GPS when I just started geocaching. They're like, here, I've got an extra one. Let's take it out. I'll show you how to use it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had the phone. So I've always tried to pay it forward that way. And I think EarthCache is one of those few things because it intimidates so many people.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. We talked about it, but it seems to intimidate more people than any other cache type. Mm-hmm. So I figure if you're going to be an EarthCache owner, you need to be willing to reach out to people and help them kind of like not be scared and do it as much as you possibly can. I think that's the minimum you can do. Giving back to the game that's like basically free for us, right? Now we've all spent thousands of dollars playing this free game, but essentially a free game, you should be paying it forward constantly.
Yep. It's the interactive element of geocaching that doesn't so much exist for any other cache type.
Yeah, it's easier to get into that interactive part of it, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Now I have had a recent log that was from somebody, and this is like as an owner for any cache, you should always be checking for couch loggers and stuff, but there was a recent logger on one that posted a find log, I think for 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and they said they were basically catching up. Their log wasn't very unique about the location. It was fairly vague, and they didn't send any answers. They didn't post any pictures, and the way that they have the website set up now, you can't view somebody's find history necessarily. And so I couldn't scan back that long enough to be able to see if there were other caches in the area that they had found to see if they had actually been there. So very suspicious. So I had to contact them and say, like your typical thing, you haven't sent in answers yet. There's certain things you've got to do for Earth caches, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was a few back and forth message exchanges. And every time they responded, it was still vague enough to not be evidence or proof enough that they were actually there.
Yeah.
They posted pictures, but then they don't look, they look kind of like the location, but not recognizable as the location. It could have been anywhere. It could have been taken. I tried to like reverse image search to see if they took it off the internet somewhere. You know, it's like, oh, what do you do in that situation? Because like, there's no way to actually know. And it's like, they're just kind of skirting the edge of truth and lie. And
right. You know, and at the end of the day, the damage of deleting a legitimate finder is way worse than letting a couch logger get through. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a couch logger is a cheater anyway, right? You're not going to stop them from cheating. They're not going to be like, you know what? I have a new philosophy of life. I'm going to stop cheating on something that doesn't matter. They're not going to do that, right? They're going to keep cheating. Yeah. But the person that's really struggling is legitimate. You could definitely, by how you react to them, turn them off to the game. Mm-hmm. So not that I want couch loggers to get through, but you're not going to change that behavior.
Yeah.
Your one time of, you know, catching them is not going to, they're going to just move on to another one and try to cheat. Mm-hmm. But helping the person that is really trying, that's going to go a long way. And that person may be in the game for, you know, 20, 30 years from now. So it's a balance, right? You know, I like catching cheaters more than anybody, but at the same time, you know, I'll let some cheaters pass if I can help some people in the game.
Yeah. Well, one of the philosophies that I often support is making sure that the cache history, at least recent history, is accurate. So the logs, because people read the logs, if you're going out to find a cache, the recent history is what you look at. You know, everybody reads it. It's public. So cache owner's responsibility is to maintain their cache listing as well as their cache container to make sure that the logs are as reasonably true as they can judge. And so for something like this, if it's an Earth cache that was posted as a find 3 years ago, there's no way to verify. They're putting all this work, say it is fake, they're putting all this work into trying to prove to you that it's true. It's just not worth fighting.
No, it's not.
It's like, the recent history is accurate. Nobody's going to be looking back 3 years to see that stuff. Yeah. Like, it's just, let it go. Now, if they were trying to couch log, say, a week ago, and there hasn't been any other logs or something like that, then I would want to make sure that find log is accurate to the experience. Because if somebody looks at it, then, you know, so that there's that judgment call that I guess a cache owner has to make. And so they'll come in. You got to decide. Another question. Have you ever FTF'd an Earth cache?
Oh, gosh, I feel like I have. I think I've FTF'd every cache type. how would I even know that?
That is another question.
There's Prodigy C has a list of those, right?
Yeah, because they search the find log. They can record
them. I'm almost 99% positive I've FTF'd an Earth cache. I think I've FTF'd all cache types except for a virtual and a webcam. I've even FTF'd an event because I thought it was funny. I'm almost positive that I have. Now I'm going to have to go back and research it, but I'm pretty sure that I have.
It is a tough one because there's no, like, we always say FTFs, there's no metric for it and all that. There's right. The signature and then there's the first log and all that. But Earth caches, yeah, I mean, if three people visit the location the same day, who is the first to be able to claim it, right? Because then is it who stepped foot in the location first or who posted their find log first or who sent in answers first or who got a verified correct answer? Like, there's so many other factors with an Earth cache FTF. It's like, it's a tough one.
Not to get total off topic, because FTF is not a real stat, right? First of all.
Yes.
I would say it's the first person that sends in and gets confirmation of the answers.
Yeah.
If I was going to say how you do it on Earth cache, doesn't matter when you go to it. It matters when you get, that's when you've officially found it, right?
It becomes an etiquette and honor system type of thing. Cause yeah, if two people do that and then they both log it a week later, how do you know who was actually there first and sent in answers first? You have to confirm with the owner. It's like, I think if you really want the FTF, you're going to get there. You're going to get the answers. You're going to do the work, send everything to the cache owner, post the find log, and then maybe edit it afterwards, or I don't know, something like that. It's too much work to try to decide who an FTF of an Earth cache is.
So I looked it up. I do have an FTF on an Earth cache. I have an FTF of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cache types. I only have one Earth cache FTF, and it was in 2020. So I do actually have one. I knew I had one from somewhere. Now that I look at it, it's one that my daughter and I did, and I think we rushed out to get it too. We were traveling at the time, but you know, you pulled it up and it hadn't been found in like days. I think it'd been out for a few days. Nobody had found it. And I was like, how often does that happen? Do what?
And nobody had posted that they found it.
Yeah. Well, that is a good point.
All right. Quick. Another question. Have you ever attempted an Earth cache that you felt was just too difficult, or like passed up on it because it was too difficult?
Yeah, I have. So actually multiple times. Well, yes and no. There was one, I think we were talking about off air before this, I never got to do. So in Rocky Mountain National Park, there's a 5.5 Earth cache, and it's a true legitimate 5.5 Earth cache. Mountain hike, snow, you have to have snowshoes, everything else to get into it. Only available per certain times a year. The questions are pretty legit on it and everything else. I knew the guy that was building it as he was building it, went through the whole process, had to get a lot of permissions and everything else because it's in a national park. It happened kind of towards the end before I moved out of there, and I never had the opportunity while it was open and available to go get it. This is one that generally takes a group for safety to get to, and you have to do some serious hiking. You know, you got to leave by 4 a.m. to get up there and everything else. I never was able to get that one. I was never going to go get it on my own. So arranging a party to do that, that's the only one that, like, I would not go and do that by myself. It was just not safe to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that really counts. I have found a few, we're just out doing regular Earth caches. And to preface this, my wife, who I cache with most of the time, hates Earth caches. She would sit in the car if I was getting out to do an Earth cache, unless I'm hiking away. Mm-hmm. She loves hikes. But even if we're at the scene of an Earth cache or at GZ of an Earth cache, she's not going to pay attention to it. She does not like Earth caches. She would like to have them banned from geocaching altogether. She thinks they're stupid. She loves virtuals, but she hates Earth caches.
Fascinating.
So if we're out together and there's an Earth cache and I'm like, I really want to go get this Earth cache, you know, we're out caching. She's like, ugh. But I'm not going to do it. If I get there and it's like, do this, go here, do this, I'm like, yeah, she's not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
So, well, if it's overly involved, I won't even do it with her there. If it's me, I'll try to do it. But I have definitely seen ones where the amount of information required will take me longer than I have at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it halfway, so I'll back out of it. Maybe I'll mark it and try to Google it later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some that can be more involved than the time I have at the time. And I just, that's not my mission for the day. Mm-hmm. So I've backed out of Earth caches based on the logging requirements before.
Yeah. I've had a few like that as well, especially when you're on the road and you see this Earth cache. It looks really like a really cool location. And then you pull in, you stop, and then you look up the description and find out the questions. It's like a 1.5 difficulty. There's 8 questions, and they all have to do research and experimenting and visit these 10 locations. Like, how is this a 1 difficulty?
And they have their time and place, right? I appreciate those sometimes, but not when it's on the fly or not when that's not what I'm wanting to do for the day.
Yeah. All right, one more question to round out this episode. If you were to create a commercial for Earth caches, how would you sell the Earth cache concept?
Simply, I would partner with the National Park Service. Mm-hmm. And I would hit on the fact that geocaching is generally not allowed in a lot of locations, and it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that even though I'm obviously we're sitting here at night, recording a podcast about geocaching. So we're pretty deep into the game, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of geocaching. However, one of the side effects of geocaching and people coming in and out of the game is that a lot of geo litter exists. Mm-hmm. You call them zombie caches, you call them whatever else. As much as I love geocaching, I don't want to see that in a lot of beautiful locations. Mm-hmm. So for me, I would sell it with national parks or whatever, under the fact that you can still go geocaching in the most beautiful locations that we have, both in this country and around the world, but we don't have an item to find there. So I think that's the perfect type of geocaching. That's the biggest sell for me, is you're truly getting out in nature and maybe accidentally learning a little bit too, but locations that shouldn't, in my opinion, have any physical container left behind, that people are going to be messing with or tracking through. Because if you're looking for, let's say, a box, let's say it's a legitimate ammo box and it's good, I would still prefer not to have that, because even if you know where it is, you're going to have to generally leave the trail, right? Mm-hmm. So think of, you know, the Leave No Trace. Think of all that. The best example of that is in a beautiful location where you're just observing from the areas you're supposed to be without traipsing through the woods, tearing things up, making a new trail. I think it's probably the best for the environment. So I would just open it up with a national park, show beautiful locations, and be like, we love you geocachers, but keep your trash out of the park, you know. Observe and enjoy this. Still get your smileys. Get a whole series of them. It's a park. We have 30 locations you can check out here, and we want you to go to these locations, which – I've actually reached out to park directors when I'm doing that before. And I said, I want to do an Earth cache here. And they said, tell me what it is. And once I explained it, they go, okay, can you put it at the other 3 locations too? Cause we want to bring people here. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Do you know anybody that knows something about it? Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. So it can be done in concert with to take people to a specific location, not tear anything else up. You know, we should, as geocachers, love the environment. So I think that's an easy sell. Beautiful location. Still get your smileys. Don't tear anything up.
Yeah, I like that. I like the aspect of the environmental being clean environmentally. Because I would throw that in there. And personally, loving the adventure and discovery, I'd absolutely show a lot of those beautiful locations. Like, show these epic places. And then show people of all ages going on these hikes down the trail. And then show the hands-on experiences, like pushing yourself through a cave into a crevice somewhere, and then to find a certain type of rock, or smashing open a rock, or doing things to find fossils, like doing hands-on things that are really discovery at the small scale, while also contrasting with the grand scale of these enormous, beautiful park locations that you don't see if you're just in the city, sitting at your computer, working and going to school every day. Like, you get out there, discover what is out there in nature, and you're learning and having this hands-on adventure. And yeah, you have that aspect of you're not actually leaving trash or finding trash. You know, it's clean, you have fresh air. You're not, yeah, it's all of that stuff. And right. Yeah, and it doesn't always have to be national parks either, but that's
obviously no, where
big stuff is. And so,
well, yeah, I mean, I live on the state with the most beaches anywhere, right? There's tons of stuff here to do earth caches too. It's not even mountains or anything like that. It's not national parks. It's it's all kinds of stuff. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you could go a different route and imagine you're a high school geology teacher and you're like, I wish I had a game where I could send people out to look at the lessons we're doing and even track it to see if they're actually doing it. Oh, wait, there is this geocaching, earth caching type thing.
Yep.
They can use their phones, which they all love, and go out and find these locations and answer my geology questions, and I can do it, tell exactly when they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can sell it a lot of different ways, right?
Yeah, and you could even round it out with an actual physical cache where the container is in the visitor center of a park. So it's like you have Earth as a title and caching, where the lost scene is somebody opening up the container from behind the counter.
And those are cool too. When you go to the visitor center ones, because they're protected, and they have a nice big container, and you sign it, and everybody knows what it is. That's a good like finisher to a earth cache trail for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jesse, it has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting about earth caches. It's good to be able to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Hey, you were just in Florida, so it's your fault. You didn't come by my house at all, so that's shame on you.
Oh, I forgot you're in Florida. Oh man. Well, maybe next time. I don't know. That's the second time I've been in Florida in my entire life, so we'll see when it happens again. But it was great to have you on here, and it's another jam-packed episode of everything we ever wanted to know about earth caches.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed this. I know we had to schedule to get it on and everything else, but We haven't hung out in quite a while, so we need to get out there and caching again.
Have you got a story or adventure to share? Tips and links and stories are always welcome, so please email tgif@cachetheline.net. But that's all for this show. Do me a favor and hit the like button or give the show a thumbs up or a positive review if you enjoy it so it can spread to more people. And if you have any adventures you'd love to share on the show, I'd love to hear from you. Any comments, funny stories, milestones, accomplishments, rants, or adventures, please email tgif@cachetheline.net or phone one in by calling to leave a message at cachetheline.net/POI. Links and references mentioned in the episode can be found in the show notes linked in the description. If you'd like to join the band of excellent adventurers who help support Cache the Line and this podcast, please find us on Patreon or by visiting www.cachetheline.net/Patreon. Thanks for listening. See you next month with more exploration into the wide world of excellent geocaching adventures. And as always, happy caching and excellent adventuring.